This is a Pinball News production.
Hello, everybody. Can everybody hear me all right? I'm Paul Ferris. I'm here to talk a little bit about being a pinball artist and pinball art in general. You might wonder why I have a slide up of a wrestling coach working with his wrestler right now, but this goes back to 1975, and that's what I was doing at the time. And, I'm often asked of whatever got me into pinball art. And it was not kind of the normal path that I would think you would expect. But at the time, I was this is 1975, I had been coaching and teaching at a high school in the Chicago area. And I was a head wrestling coach and the art teacher. But I was also producing fine art paintings and selling them in the summers and through galleries and art shows. And just by coincidence, that got mentioned to Mr. Billy O'Donnell Jr., who was the son of the owner of Bally, or the president of Bally, and just coincidentally, they were looking for someone that could come in and establish an in-house art department, possibly, as this company was about to really grow. This was around the time of, for those of you who are familiar with some of the games, but around the time of Wizard, which was one of the first licensed pinball games. They approached me about coming in there to be an artist, number one, and also to maybe develop an art department in-house. So, because at the time, almost all pinball art by all four manufacturers was being done by one design firm in Chicago called Ad Poster. And they did a nice job, but what Bally wanted to do was get a little bit more of a unique look to their artwork. And they had an artist there at the time, and I'm sure some of you are familiar with his games. His name is Dave Christensen. He had done Fireball, and he had done Wizard, and was, at the time that I came there, was working on Captain Fantastic. So I'm going to move ahead. This is the kind of work I was doing at that time. Those are actually my kids now, my daughter is now in her 40s. My son is now 45, so this is a while back. But this is the kind of work I was doing. I'll go back. There's a little bit of a delay on the button here, so I want to rush through it. These are some examples of the paintings I was doing and selling at the art shows. And actually, it was going so well that I was considering possibly leaving teaching and doing this full time. But I was only 26 at the time, three kids. It's kind of a bold move to just become a fine artist and support yourself and the family. So it was I was considering it. As I said, then Billy O'Donnell gave me a call, asked if I'd be interested in coming in and talking to him about pinball or being a pinball artist. Now, I didn't know anything about pinball. I mean, in Chicago, we didn't even see pinballs. As Roger Sharp mentioned earlier, they weren't even legal. So we didn't, you know, I was only aware of some, just seeing some pinball art that was done at the time. And it was definitely a very stylized, cartoon-style art from most of what I saw. So I did agree to go and talk to Billy. I talked to Ross Scheer, who was the marketing director at the time. And what I took in to show of my artwork was work like this, fine artwork. And I also took in some drawings I had done as a eighth grader or freshman in high school that were of football players and athletes and monsters. You know, I was a big fan of all the famous monsters. So that's what I took in to show them for my interview. You know, I wasn't even sure I wanted to even do this, but I wanted to come in and talk to him. Well, when I did go in and look at the games that were being done, I saw Dave Christensen's Fireball, and I saw his work on Wizard, and that gave me some encouragement that they really wanted to do something with a different look to it and a much more, the term fine art is what I was hoping to try to apply to the work, and it got me a little bit excited about possibly doing it. I turned the job down a couple times as I was just kind of wavering about doing it. But then my wife, who is much better at forethought than I am, said this is kind of a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. You know, this may be a great time to do this. And she didn't know anything about pinball, but she knew a lot about business. So anyway, I did make the move to Bally. I worked as an artist for a year, doing some artwork. Some of the games that I see on the floor here are actual games that I did. One of them is Knight Rider, which was a truck driver theme that, again, I don't have pictures of every game I've done. I have some, though, that I'll show you. Knight Rider actually has, as one of the truck driver on the game, was my assistant wrestling coach when I left coaching, and I immortalized him as a truck driver. And so, and I've used my family members, and I've used friends and my brother, a variety of people at different times on these different pinball machines that I did. So this is actually when I was I decided to look more artistic and grow a beard, and this is a painting I was doing for the game called Paragon. That's one of my favorite games. You know, again, I was a wrestling coach and a wrestler, so I used myself as the barbarian on top of the lion creature, and then that's actually my wife. And you'll see a little bit more of that later on, but she was actually a good sport enough to be my model for this. And so she's the lady on Paragon everybody wants me to introduce them to. So, she is not real comfortable with that, but it's all good. All right, this is just a little, and I usually bring these to these shows, and I didn't this time, but they're like little postcards that I put together just to kind of show samples of some of the work I've done. It ranges in terms of time period from about 1975, which is, if you look up, or 1977, I think, was 8-Ball, and all the way up to the latest one there, the most recent one there was the GoldenEye piece, which is a James Bond piece. So this is just a sample of different pieces I've done over the years. And these are all, for the most part, these are all painted pieces. The only one that isn't is 8-Ball. And I bring that up now because I'm going to show you a piece in a few minutes that represented a total change in the way artwork was created and screen printed for the industry. If you look at 8-Ball, and again, if you're familiar with some of the older games like Knight Rider and, in my case, Evel Knievel, I see an Evel Knievel glass sitting back there. Those were all done in the conventional style of art that we used to do. We would do a very elaborate ink drawing, and I hate to use this term, but almost like a coloring book, we would fill in all the different colors as a separate screen-printed process, and it was all done by hand. Well, someone came to me about trying to come up with a different idea about printing, and it wouldn't work for what we wanted to do, but it gave me an idea about creating four-color process screen-printed backglasses. Four-color processes, for those that don't know, that's just the way they print magazines and books, and it uses the four different dots of cyan, magenta, black, and yellow, and when those dots all combine in the right way, you have a beautiful full-color piece of artwork that could look like an oil painting, could be like an airbrush piece. I mean, it was a great idea for an artist. Is the reason I wanted to do it, because it gave us much more flexibility and much more capability of doing some very elaborate and more beautiful pieces, I thought. The Valley loved it because it saved them millions of dollars over the years in terms of the cost of producing the glasses. So they were very kind to me for doing this, but my motivation was really about artwork. I mean, that was the whole motivation for it, and I never even, it was just a nice side benefit that the cost came down so much because of the process. So this was 8-Ball. Going back in those days, many times pinball artists, I was talking to Roger Sharp about this earlier, we weren't so bold as to try to create a new art form or a new art genre or a new art look. We were basically trying to reflect pop culture. So, and that's why licensed games, when they came along, worked so well. But as artists just in the realm of what we did every day where the themes came up from our own ideas, we tried to reflect what was going on at the time. And at this time, a lot of the artwork that was being produced, and some of the best illustrators in the world, was being done on album covers. You know, there used to be a large format, if you remember the vinyl LPs that were done, and some of these, especially rock bands, there were some just great artwork that were done for those. And so then you had, you know, current TV shows and things like that were reflected at the time. So like Roger was saying earlier, if you look back at the artwork that was done during this era, you can kind of see where the culture was, too. Again, when I did the Knight Rider game, That was during the CB craze, and some of you probably don't even remember that, but you're too young to remember it. But it's when everybody was getting into CB radios, and everybody had to have a handle, and so it just reflected that in the game. So eight ball and the interesting thing about eight ball for me, when I look at it, this was the number one selling pinball game of all time until Adam's Family eclipsed that not too long ago actually. It's been a while, but in terms of the pinball industry, this had the record for number of sales of over 20,000 games, and it's a game that I wanted to hurry up and get done so I could get onto my Lost World game that I had was going to be the first four-color painted back glass that was going to be hit the market, and I really wanted to get onto that one, so I was very excited. So I did this one based on Norm Clark was a designer at the time, the director of the pinball designers, and he really wanted. He said pool games are always good, and Roger even alluded to that earlier today. But so this is the pool theme. But we kind of picked up on the Happy Days, environment without really using the characters. It is a similar looking character to the Fonzie character, but it's not identical. I did hear that Fonzie was quoted, or Winkler, Henry Winkler was quoted as saying that he knew he really made it in the world because he saw himself on a pinball game. But it really wasn't, that wasn't the total intention, but it was a facsimile of that character, that kind of a character. Anyway, the game was very successful. Last one I did that used the line art solid screen print system, and again, this game, which doesn't look all that colorful, has about 14 different screens to it and operations. And for you folks that have been doing this amazing job of rehabbing some of these games that I've seen, I don't know how you do it, because I walk in that room out there and I'm just stunned at how pristine these games look, and how I don't know. It's a very tough thing to kind of recondition a glass and make it look like it did originally. But this system relied on four. Or not four, but this one, 14 different layers of color. So this is okay. This was the little test we did. I still have this. It's only about 12 by 12 in size, but we had to show management how this process was going to work. It sounds great. It sounds like it would save money, only doing four operations at a time to create a whole glass. But this was a little sample sheet I did to kind of test the different possibilities. And I put in text in there. I did a little drawing that kind of became the subject for Lost World. Actually, Lost World was inspired by an artist named Frank Frazetta, who has since passed away, but was one of the top sword and sorcery and heroic fantasy type of artists that was doing artwork at the time. And so I knew it was kind of an up-and-coming popular theme, although it was different from what was being done at the time on pinball machines. Anyway, this particular piece actually has the four different, we screen printed it, tried a test piece. I actually have the glass that we used. It's just not it's so cheesy now compared to what we ended up with, but it was nice to see the process would work. We had to make sure it would work in terms of production and manufacturing. As Gary Stern was talking about earlier, you're still manufacturers. You got to be able to reproduce it, repeat it effectively, make sure the process can be held consistent. Okay, there's the Lost World glass as it finally appeared. This is one of my favorite games. It's not necessarily one of my favorite pieces of art in terms of the sophistication of the art or what I would have liked to have done, but it was done to make it work with this new process and work effectively. For that reason, and then it's in terms of pinball history, it's very important in terms of what it represented. So that's why I tend to really, really like it. And this is the one I was trying to get to when I was doing 8-Ball, and they knew 8-Ball was going to be a success. I should also mention that 8-Ball was the first, I believe, as our first full production game as an all electronic game as opposed to electromechanical. So that helped its sales quite a bit. But it was this one was also all electronic as well. But it was our second one. And the runs in those days for this was a game they produced, I think it was 10 or 12,000 of these, and they actually cut it short because they had another license game they had to get into next. So this one was surprisingly popular, and they would have probably liked to run more, but this is when this industry was really picking up and going, going great guns. Okay, then this was my next piece, which was our next licensed game. Playboy. This one does have a combination of the solid screen printing technique and the four-color process. Doing this game was, to say the least, was a lot of fun. And I probably should elaborate a little bit. When I talk to my, I've been a high school art teacher for 10 years now, and I do show them this, some of these slides, and of course they all want to know about all about this one. And I will say that in the beginning, my concept that I sent to Hefner was rejected, and that was kind of hard. I've only been in the business for 2 years, and already I'm getting a major guy rejecting the art. But it wasn't because he didn't like the quality of the art or the idea. Because I had it kind of the Playboy lifestyle and the clubs and, you know, kind of like an advertisement for Playboy. He didn't want that. He wanted to be the man. He wanted to be the Playboy. He wanted to be in the middle of the two women. And he even told me which women I had to use. And when we went out to, again, this is part of the good stuff. When we went out to California, we got to go to the mansion. And I had the, he took us on a tour of the place. And, you know, I watched Bill Cosby's down playing tennis on the tennis court and all these, you know, peacocks running around, beautiful women all over. It was just, you know, it was a, like a, you know, I've been in, out of teaching for 2 years, and here I am at the Playboy Mansion with Hugh Hefner taking me on a private tour. I was a little overwhelmed, to say the least. And then I had the good or the bad manners to play pinball with him and beat him in pinball. Yeah. I didn't realize he had considered himself to be, you know, quite the pinball player. And of course, everybody supported that myth. But anyway, he got to he had a lot of input on this game, and to the point where they were building a casino in Atlantic City at this time. And one of the complaints was that Hugh Hefner was so involved in the design of the pinball game that he didn't have time to worry about the casino. You know, and that was a pretty major deal at that time. But he really loved to play pinball. You've seen, I think, if you were here earlier, I think it was Jim Shelberg showed the. Some of the movies of the game house he has and people playing pinball and all the variety of games they have. And even at that time, they had quite a few. But to this now, one of our visits there, he had the girl on the right, the blonde, who was his girlfriend at the time, come down and play the piano so we could hear the Playboy jingle and then talk about, you know, how she thought she looked on her game. And she was she thanked me for her cleavage. It was pretty exciting time. Four times out there to do one game. It might have been excessive, but it was certainly worth the time. So this is that game room that was in that piece a little bit earlier, but that's my artwork hanging over his mantle of the game room. So I, as far as I know, it's still there. Because this was actually taken by, some of you might know, Kevin O'Connor, who's another pinball artist that I hired back in the day, and went on to, he actually did work on the second Playboy pinball game that was done, and while he was there, he took this picture for me and gave it to me. So that was what it looked like at the time. Okay, this is that Paragon piece you saw earlier that I was working on when it was black and white, and this, what I'm going to show you now, pretty much is going to be some of the artwork that I've done. Some of you, probably a lot of you are familiar with them. If not, I mean, it'll be maybe the first time you've seen some of these, but what I'm showing you primarily is the artwork itself, not the games taken as a photograph of the back glass. And but this is the Paragon piece. It's a pretty large painting, and it, as I said, represents my wife and I, and at the time with in sort of the heroic fantasy theme. But it was based on the Lost World characters that I created on the Lost World game. So we came out with our first wide body. It was a lot of fun to do, obviously, because the theme, I enjoyed the theme. I don't know if anybody watches Game of Thrones, or is it, but I'm a huge fan of that kind of genre. So this was pretty popular theme at the time as well. Okay, this one. This is actually not. This is not going so much chronologically now. I'll jump around a little bit here. I actually have these pieces in because these are some of my favorite pieces that I did. This one, a lot of people don't know what this one looks like because this is Phantom of the Opera. It was done for Data East Pinball, I'm trying to remember the date. Early 80s, maybe 88, maybe 85. What is it? 87. Thank you. I knew it was somewhere in that era. The cool thing about this painting for me was that Joe Kamenkow had contacted me. It's the first piece that I did with Data East. And Joe was very enthused about it. And the one thing about it was, this is around the time that the Broadway play had just started to come out, and Phantom of the Opera sort of was becoming, again, a sort of a pop culture theme. But they obviously, Data East at the time did not want to pay for a license, nor did they need to, because what they had me do was read the book. The book is public domain, so I read the book, and I did my version of Phantom of the Opera. And so this is it, and again, this is the unmasked Phantom. You don't walk up to the game in an arcade. I don't think there's one on the floor here. I don't know if I've seen anybody that had one here today. And again, it's one of my favorite games, so I was kind of saddened by that. But the way we did it was, there's a mask in front of the Phantom's face that you see as you approach the game, as you play the game, but as certain things in the game intensify and the points go up, all of a sudden these lights behind the face go on and they make the mask disappear and you see the unmasked Phantom. So my painting in my studio, that still hangs in my studio, is this version of it. Okay, and it's an oil painting. And the other thing that's kind of interesting about it, and I'll show you in a second, that how we sometimes take you behind the curtain a little bit and show you how we create these things that are not from an actual movie where we can get photos that are released to us or a TV show. This one had to come out of my head, but it wasn't totally out of my head, because that's my daughter is the Christine Daae character. She was 20 at the time, a ballet dancer herself, so that's her as the ballet dancer. She's the blonde at the bottom. And then all the Phantom characters were actually my sons. Now, my sons don't look like that, but they obviously stood in as models. So there it is with the mask on it, and that's probably the way most of you have always seen the game. And this was a lot of fun to do for me. I really enjoyed it, because it was taking my imagery of the book and kind of putting it to an oil painting. And then this is how we do it. That's my daughter. That's my sons. And this my son in the bathrobe became a skull-faced phantom at a masquerade party, and so on. And my daughter in her prom dress. And my kids were great sports, and so was my wife, having to do some of this stuff. But and then this is again more of there's my son with the mask on. And I actually made the mask just to fit the style of the mask, because that's not like any Phantom mask that has ever been used. Ed Cibula, Gary Stern, they became on the playfield, they became the owners of the Opera House. Again, my daughter's pick, she was on the playfield. That was the fellow in the Falcons shirt is actually her ex-boyfriend, so we just cross him out now on the painting. But and that's my youngest son up there at the top left-hand corner, for, and that was actually used as the Phantom, the pose for the Phantom on the playfield. So we get a little help by taking photo references and then working from there. This is a game. How many are familiar? Are anybody familiar with this game at all? Okay, do you know the story behind it a little bit? This was a game where I left Bally, started my own business as a freelance artist and doing work for the pinball business, but also for video games, for any other kind of illustration work that came along. I mean, I had some pretty neat contracts outside of the game business. This one that, where I was approached by Williams to do a game called Grand Lizard that did get produced. I designed the playfield, the cabinet, the whole package, and then did the back glass. They accepted the sketches, and they liked it. And I did a full painting. And then right near production, they changed the display position. They were going to go to a different display, and it required different spacing. And rather than go back and try to redo this, Python Angelo redid the back glass. So this one, I think, only appeared on, I think there's only maybe 25 glasses that were ever printed of this one. And I kind of liked it. Again, that's my son is the who was a really an all-state wrestler in high school. So I used him as my heroic figure in the center, and then my daughter not green and doesn't have a long tail, but she was my model for the serpent lady at the top. And so I really enjoyed this piece. It was just sort of sad in a way that it never got produced or manufactured, but I still have the painting and still kind of enjoyed doing it. And they were great to work with. It just was done under a very tight schedule. I remember that. We had about a month to do this, and normally we would take 6 to 8 weeks to do a full pinball machine in terms of from sketches to the final product. And in this case, I did it in a month, and it was pretty intense. So it's just sort of sad it never got to be used. Okay, this one, we just had the 25th anniversary of Xenon up at Expo. I don't know if anybody was up there. It was a great time for us because we got to see Suzanne Ciani, who, if you know the story about Xenon, she was the voice of Xenon. And Xenon was historic in terms of pinballs because it was the first female voice on a pinball machine. And this is an amazingly creative lady who did a lot of like signature logos, sound logos for Columbia Films and for Coca-Cola and for a variety of high-level clients. But she also agreed to do the voice for pinball. She went over to Broadway Arcade, kind of studied the way people play pinballs and sort of the gestures they do. And so some of the ooh and ahs and some of the sounds that she produced on her voice came from watching actual people play pinball, because she didn't have a clue before that. So she went over to Broadway Arcade and got an education. But anyway, this was a fun piece to do. It was a double glass that had an infinity box on it. We used that on another game, Space Invaders. We used that on. It was on a standard size game. And it was just sort of and this was done way, you know, the tall, 8-foot tall, large-eyed blue lady was way before Avatar ever even was in Jim Cameron's head. So it was kind of neat to see that kind of evolve into a different style for current movies even. This was a pretty successful game. The biggest thing about it, as most of you know, it had the transport tube that went from one side of the playfield to the other, which in those days was pretty far out, you know. Okay, that is the lady on Paragon in full dress, and this was about 1990 when I took this. Again, I just to kind of show kids, this was when I was a college wrestling coach at the time. So, but that's the Paragon painting with us. Okay, and has nothing to do with pinball, but during all this time that I was freelancing and working at, most of the time when I was still even working at Bally, I coached wrestling. I don't know how, I'm thinking back on it now, I don't know how I did it. I don't know how I worked the time in. Because to me, wrestling is like somebody's game of tennis or golf for other people. I wrestle because it's my physical activity, and I still do it. So at this time, I was coaching college kids, and this was all going on at the same time I was doing this artwork. Luckily, as a freelancer, your schedule is pretty flexible, so I was able to work it in and survive the workouts with sometimes these college kids are 285 pounds and are gorillas, so it's pretty challenging. But it was fun. All right, this is a game again, one of my favorite pieces of art. The game did okay. John Borg is actually the designer of this game, but he's done a lot of very successful games for Data East and Sega. But the fun thing about this was this movie, Frankenstein, was with Robert. That's Robert De Niro as the Frankenstein character in the center there. They did a lot of research on the book and then tried to recreate the time period that the book was actually written in, which is in the 1800s. And nobody really had done that. The modern version or the version from the 1930s of Frankenstein was much more updated. So, I mean, all the sets and all the costumes were very true to the book. So that was why it was fun. And I just liked the way the art came out. We had a lot of characters to work with. Again, more of the movie poster style of art. A lot more airbrush in this probably than some of my earlier work. But again, one of my favorite pieces to work on. That one hangs in my studio right now as well. And this is one of the later ones I did, one of the last ones I did. It's the GoldenEye piece of the James Bond, the first James Bond movie that Pierce Brosnan did. When you worked at Data East, especially for Data East, I mean, I never really worked at Data East. I worked for them and doing several commissions. But when you worked for them, especially in the later years, they were almost every game was becoming a licensed game. They really were, and Gary talked about it earlier. I mean, they really believe that licensing is a good thing, as long as it's a good license. You always do run the risk of something happening, and that's why it's a little reminiscent of the Evel Knievel glass I look at back there. Back in those days, after we did the Evel Knievel coin-op game, Montgomery Ward's actually wanted to do a home pinball version of that game. And I don't know if this is in the the lore of pinball development at this point. But so we did a modified version of that game, and it was about ready to come out in production. And Evel Knievel, who probably some of you don't even remember who he is, but he was a daredevil motorcyclist, he went to, took a baseball bat to his manager and beat the crap out of him. And that became, you know, news. It certainly didn't spread as fast as things spread today, but it got around pretty quickly. So we suddenly had to do a reboot of the artwork, and Kevin O'Connor came up with a version of a game called Galaxy Ranger that replaced the Evel Knievel piece. So the idea of a license has got to have enough lifespan to it that if nothing happens in the time from the time you start the piece till the time you produce it, and it gets out in the marketplace, and that is a little risky. I mean, there are things that can happen, and there's one that we're helping with us firsthand. This is a game that was painted, and two play fields were done. It was actually a dual play field pinball game. How many of you ever seen it on in the field? You actually saw what you saw the one at. Okay, and that's the only place it ever went. it was never produced, but it was for the movie Total Recall that Arnold Schwarzenegger was in, and Sharon Stone, and so that's the artwork for a game that, and again, it took the same amount of time. They you know, I got paid, so that's all good. But when they make a decision sometimes about a game, that if it doesn't test right, or if it doesn't, you know, in those days, it's just kind of a, will this work? Is it too big? Because with two, it was two conjoined pinball play fields and two cabinets joined into one back glass, which, you know, when you're fighting for square footage at a location, it's a kind of a tough thing. So it never got made. There it is with the logo on it, and that was in the back. So that's what it would have been like if we ever had it appear. I did several of the Batman games for Stern, and we did, the first one I did was produced. The second one, it was a second Tim Burton movie, and I forgot which, the one that had Danny DeVito in it, but I remember I did a full back glass for that, did a play field, but that one never got produced, and I'm not sure why. But when you're a freelancer, you take the job, you do the work, you know, you turn it in, and it's up to them to do what they want with it, you know. But I still have the painting for that one too. This one was kind of odd. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which is a popular theme, comic book theme. And when the guys that developed this concept in the comic book for this, Eastman and Laird, and they're out of Massachusetts, when we sent the sketches in, they kept rejecting the sketches, and this has never happened on any other game that I've done. In pinball, you generally, and my apologies to the ladies in here, but we generally were trying to project to a male-dominated audience, and so we always, very often, had sexy ladies on there. In this one, they made me, how can I say this, they made me increase the size of her chest twice, till it looks like it looks now. And these were the comic book guys, not some. It's usually the other way around. You know, isn't this a little bit too sexist? Or that was sort of more what we'd get used to hearing. But in this case, it was the other way. And so I just accommodated the creators of the comic book to do that to the lady on the comic book piece. So that's how it went out as the final painting. This piece, I have this in here because it's my only shot I actually have of the Phantom of the Opera cabinet, which I really like. This is one of the last ones that we did as the old-fashioned way of doing it, which is the line art and fill-in technique. The other, my students often ask me when I show them this is if I have any pants on in this picture. The truth is, this is in my home, and I have a game room, and then there's a pool outside the game room, so I am in swimming trunks, I assure you. And this fellow here that's playing the game, the little guy there, he ends up being on my last pinball machine that I'll show you when he was, I think, about 15 at that time, and now he's 25. So so that's kind of just significant for that reason. Oh, this is... I stuck this one in. This just happened 4 weeks ago. Again, the wrestling coach thing is a major part of my life. As I said, it's always been almost as important as art. The fella in the lower left-hand corner of the piece there is an Illinois state wrestling champion, and he's my grandson. And couldn't be more proud of him because I'm the one that got him into this sport in the first place when he was 8 years old, and I felt tremendous responsibility and pressure that for this to be a good experience for him. But it turned out to be tremendous, and And I got to coach him at the state tournament. And after he was done, he proceeded to do a backflip and then run and jump into my arms and give me a big hug. And it, you know, it doesn't get any better than that. So that's why I included that. But this is kind of how the whole coaching thing has come around full circle. I started out as a coach, and I'm kind of ending up with a grandson who's a state champion. That's pretty fulfilling. So pretty rewarding. Okay, this was my last commercial pinball. It's Twister. Based on the movie Twister, again, that's a Sega who was Data East before that, as you all know. And again, kind of a fun movie. The thing I always talk about this, and this is what I tell my students about, when you're an artist and you're working for somebody else, you don't always have the creative control to do what you want to do. I mean, you're dealing with other people's opinions, other people's desires for what they want. If you're a fine artist, well, go ahead and do it the way you want and then hang it in a gallery. And if somebody wants to buy it, great, but you've done your thing. Well, in this case, the only troubling thing about doing this piece was Helen Hunt, the actress that's in this piece, was going through kind of a transformation of she wanted to become a leading lady, more romantic type. And this was a movie that was coming out currently, but they also, her people, her managers and so on, all knew the way she was trying to steer her career. And they made me, every photograph I had of her, her eyes were very squinty, and she was looking off in the distance at tornadoes. And they made me keep opening her eyes up further and further until, in my view, it didn't even look as much like her. But she approved it. And what I notice now when I look at movies that she's in or even TV shows that she's in, it's clear that she's had eye surgery, and because I don't think anybody would know better than I after looking at it so closely. So it was just something that bothered her. I will tell you this, too. In all these licensed games that we got to do, and this I do tell my kids about this, I got to meet a lot of the actual stars or the talent, if you want to call it that. They are always wonderful. I mean, everybody from Elton John to Matt Groening, the guy that creates the Simpsons, Tim Burton, I mean, and the actors, but Pierce Brosnan played me in pinball and enjoyed it. And, I mean, it's just great. Great folks. It's usually their managers around them that are trying to protect their image or you know, just looking out for their best interests that are the ones that are a little tougher to deal with. But I have never met any personality, TV, movie star, rock singer. Gene Simmons was funny, but I didn't even do the artwork on Kiss, but we had to go and talk to him about it. And you know, he came up, he's in full makeup, in full costume before a concert while we're looking and approving the artwork, and He wanted to be bigger and buff, more buff, you know. And I was looking right at him, you know. And it was not the way he really looked at the time. So he wanted to enhance his own. He wanted us to enhance his view. But that's the worst situation. And Dolly Parton, we did a piece for Dolly Parton. I didn't do that art also, but Dave Christensen did. And she, you know, there's all kinds of things about Dolly Parton you think she might have a comment about. But at the time, she wanted her fingers longer. She wanted her hands to be not so short and stubby. So anyway, that's just kind of one of the sidelights about working with talented people. You know, artists are artists. You know, I walked into Matt Groening's office. As I walk in, he's got a Phantom of the Opera pinball in his office, and he comes up to me and shakes my hand and says, "You're a genius." Now, he's telling me I'm a genius. He just signed a $1 million contract with 20th Century Fox to do The Simpsons, which I think is the longest-running animated show on TV in TV history. So I'd say he's got it figured out pretty well, too. Okay, now this last stuff I'm just kind of putting in at the end here. This is stuff that I got to do as a video game box designer. You know, when pinball slowed down, some of the people would come to me and say, "Would you do, our packaging for some of these video games?" And this is one of the first ones I did. It was called Panic Restaurant. And the reason I have these things in here is that these have been in drawers of mine for years since I did them. And a collector called me over the summer and was interested in a certain number of people. He'd done his homework and found out that I wasn't just a pinball artist, but I did video games, and asked me about specific games that if I had done the artwork and if I had, would I sell them? And I agreed to selling some pieces, but I hadn't ever taken any good high-resolution photographs of them, so that's why I have these photos now. And this game at the time I thought wasn't a really popular game or anything, but it's now become sort of a rare game to find in the collector's thing. So in the collector's world, this was an important piece. So he bought the painting. And then I got there it is on the box. Okay, that shows how, converts to the box. This is another one. It was a game called Night Quest. Now, this is an example of when you do some projects, like the project itself may not seem, like even the what you charge for it may not be as high as you'd like, but you like to do it. You know, it's fun to do. And this one I enjoyed doing. It was just a kind of a dragon, I think it was called Dragon, or Night Quest was the name of the game, yeah. And it was, again, for either a Game Boy or some other packaging, and then also for the advertisements. So they used to use our artwork as part of the ads. Now with the video games, so much of it comes right off the game. The game is so realistic and so accurate, you don't have to have somebody go out and try to paint it. Another one, I can't remember the name of this game, but Saint Sword, I think, was the name of this one. But again, sort of that same theme. And I'm not saying I love all these so well, but I just sort of think examples of ones I did. Kadash was the name of this game. I forgot this one. I can't remember the name of this game, but it was, you know, you submit sketches. They, you know, usually you submit three sketches of different compositions, and then they choose the one they like. It isn't always more often than not, it's not the one you like the best, but this is the one that they felt worked best. This was one with there are a lot of themes in video games at the time: shooting games, car racing games, fighting games. And so, you know, your genres were sort of similar, so you had to kind of come up with different interpretations of what you're going to paint. This is a semi-realistic comical version of a game called Toki, if I remember right. And again, I'm just showing these. I'm not saying these are my favorite pieces, but they were done at the time. This is a game called Rampage, pretty popular video game. That's my son standing in for the sort of Terminator-like guy in the game. I can't remember the name of the game. It's escaping right now. But it was and they did several different versions of this game. So it came out with Power Blade, it was called. Power Blade 1, Power Blade 2, and then Power Blade 3. I think this was Power Blade 2. And again, this just shows you the process of what you would send a client for a game. This is a beach volley video game. That's the sketch I sent that they actually chose. There's a revision on the face that they asked for to make it look a little happier. And then there's the final painting. Again, style-wise, when I did these things, I didn't have to try to always stay the same style the whole time. I could kind of experiment a little bit, have some fun. Again, this is one I actually did like doing. It's back to Monsters. This is actually a game that American Sammy did. And they had this game that they developed prior to Mortal Kombat coming out. And it was all the old traditional sort of raster-style video characters. And what they really wanted to do, they knew they had a problem because Mortal Kombat changed the world, you know, in terms of how people perceive fighting games. And so what they asked me to do was create the most elaborate video cabinetry and backglass and the surrounding thing to put this game in. It was a game about, it wasn't as much about zombies as you might think. It was called Zombie Raid. But I took the two cabinet sides, and we made full-size cabinet artwork that were the same quality paintings I would do for a pinball machine. So you had almost life-size versions of this Frankenstein character, and there's a werewolf character on the other side. But there's the full-size cabinet side on one side, and then that's the werewolf on the other side. So these are a couple of my favorite pieces because I got to do what I wanted to do, and I spent more time than you would typically do on a video game in terms of the art package. Okay, and this is my last pinball machine. And I don't know if it was an omen or anything, but that's my daughter is hanging out of the car on the left side. Her husband at the time is the driver, and those are my two grandkids in the car, and then my wife is in the front seat. And then the fellow, the little boy that was playing the pinball machine earlier, is on the top roof of the machine, and that's my daughter's dog. My daughter and her husband are no longer together, but she is remarried, and that little guy, the little boy in the car right there, is the fellow who just won the state wrestling championship. So this is a game, and actually Doug Duba was here earlier, but his dad's company is the one, Roger Duba, manufactured this game, and it was actually a home pinball machine. But it was fun to do. Got to, you know, a lot of my own sort of input in terms of the characters, which was always fun. Okay, that's Batman. That's mine. Again, I'm out of order here because I was just taking pictures. But that's the original Batman I did with the with the Tim Burton movie, Four Data East. And this one, Roger Sharp, is he still here? Roger, recognize that? This is a game, it's a redemption game that Roger and I worked on together for Bromley, and it was the 25th anniversary of the Muppets, as I remember. And this was sort of a Halloween theme where obviously Miss Piggy dresses up like the Bride of Frankenstein, and Kermit is the Frankenstein character, and so on. You know, so that was one of the later things that I did in the game business. And then in 2002, I went back into teaching, and thought I was going to keep doing all this and teach at the same time, but that became impossible. But a couple other things. These were just some posters. This is a game, a redemption game I did for American Sammy. So it just kind of shows you some of the different styles I was asked to do from time to time. I think that might be layout. Okay, where we go. Anyway, so the as I said, I've gone back into education in 2002, and I'm currently still doing that. I'm getting a little more disillusioned with the public school system, and at least in Illinois, because it's a very challenging time to teach the arts right now. I mean, there's so much emphasis on math and science and ACT scores, and it's really hard for these kids to really get involved in art. I mean, it's just very tough to work it in their schedule. I will say that since 2002 until now, the kids I've had have been fantastic. Kids have not changed since I mean, there's a lot of ways they have changed, but in terms of willingness to work, willingness to try to get better and good at their work, it's been tremendously rewarding. I was telling someone earlier, I often say I feel like a magician who's handing over the magic tricks to other magicians to then develop. And I've watched these kids, every year we win national awards for the Scholastic Art Competition, which is the most prestigious and the largest and oldest high school art competition in the country. So I've watched these kids do amazing things, and it's really rewarding. As I said, I'm a little just a little bit discouraged by some of the work that's going on that are facing the arts in schools right now. So I don't know how much longer I'm going to do it, but as long as the kids are like they have been, I can't imagine, other than that state championship of my grandson, I can't imagine anything more rewarding than watching kids develop this stuff that is amazing. I mean, I wish I had someone that was teaching me that had my experience back when I was in high school, because I think it would take a lot less time to get good, because these kids really want to learn how to do it and do it well. So at this point, I don't know how our time is. How are we doing time-wise? So I want to open up for if anybody has any questions. What's it? A little time for questions? Okay. Okay. Again, if anybody would like to, has any questions about anything I've shown or anything else that, yes, sir, Mr. Flowers.
With Total Recall.
Want to get your mic there?
Sorry, Total Recall. You showed us the back glass art. Did you do any other art for the game?
I'm having trouble here because of the roar behind you.
With Total Recall, did you do any other art other than the back glass?
For?
Total Recall.
Total Recall. Oh, I'm sorry. I did a play field, and it actually had two different play fields. So I didn't do all the color work on it though, because they were still testing this thing, and you saw it in the, and it was a big monster, wasn't it? Yeah, they were testing it, and I think they just determined that it wasn't time for, you know, the market wasn't really ready for something like this at that time. But again, a back glass usually takes, I mean, if you're doing nothing but that piece of artwork, a back glass would take about 2 weeks from it, once it's approved. Again, some of the times the process is getting approvals from licensors, so that would be could be kind of challenging. But in this case, the artwork had all been approved, and so you work 2 weeks on a backlash, and then then you go to production. You start doing the playfield. Actually, you get the playfield or the backlash approved first, and then that gets the process going. Then you usually do the playfield and the cabinet, so they could start to build them up and screen them, and then play them, and then we would be finishing the back glass while all the other stuff was already being manufactured. So, yes. And I'm not. Yeah, it's the reason the mic is necessary. There's that rumble of games is pretty loud up here.
What electronic tools do you use to do art these days?
That's a great question, because I was traditionally trained. I taught myself a lot of what I did just by being interested as an artist. These days, you almost can't avoid using some digital, like Photoshop and those kind of techniques. I still use a lot of the traditional techniques and then take it into Photoshop, and then if I want to modify something, I can do it in Photoshop. Like airbrushing, for example, what used to take, and John Yowsey would be better to talk about this than I, even I, because he's been an airbrusher for a long time. But all the cutting of masks, all the elaborate preparation work you have to do when you airbrush, you know, in Photoshop, you can do that much quicker, and there's no cleanup, you know. So that's kind of what some of the advantages are. But I was, quite honestly, I was reluctant to embrace the digital, the whole computer thing. You know, I was definitely, it was kind of frustrating. You know, you work on something for 20 years to develop the ability to do perspective accurately and everything, and here comes a software program that can do it for you. You know, it's, for that reason, it can be a little frustrating. But you can't avoid it today. I tell all my kids that if they want to get into professional art and be commercial artists, then they better get familiar with Illustrator and Photoshop and learn how to use them. Yes, sir.
Who is your favorite game designer, and do you have any interesting stories to share with those interactions?
Boy, that's a great question. I've never been asked who was my favorite. I liked working with a lot of them. I mean, when I was at Data East, Joe had such a big, he was overseeing almost all the designs, you know, and then he had other designers that were working with him. So, I mean, he was the one who was like the one that I would interact with the most, you know. But John Borg was great. I worked with him on several pieces. Jim Patla over at Bally was one of my favorites because he, what was so great about him, he really was a very thorough, not just game designer, but an engineer. He'd make sure that those games would, when they hit the line, would really function. And we did a game called Centaur that, you know, was a pretty complex game, and he really shepherded that game through and made sure it worked. And he was very open to concepts. So was Greg Kamik, who was another one I worked a lot with at Bally. I'm trying to think who else that stands out. Those are the three I probably did the most work with, those guys. But I wouldn't, you know, I'd never, it just, on some games you'd have a great experience, other games that would be less successful, not just because the game was successful, but, you know, something might not, you just weren't as happy with the way it came out sometimes. But I'll tell you what, game designers are a special breed. It's such a specialized industry anyway, but you're dealing with all this geometry and gameplay, and the only thing I used to hate when Norm Clark used to tell me that, you know, do your nice artwork, but just don't make it busy. He didn't want it to be too, and that, in my view, that was, didn't want it to be sophisticated or elaborate, but he wanted to keep it simple. But he came from an era, and fair enough, that when you don't want to confuse the player with too many things going on in front of them. So I took that with a grain of salt and tried to keep it, tried to make them beautiful, but also functional. Yeah. Yes.
What kind of paint do you use on your pinball machines?
That's a good question. Most of these that you see, the paintings I've shown, are actually acrylic. There's only two that are up here that aren't acrylic. And acrylic is, it's a wonderful medium. If you know anything about it, it's a lot of people use it today. It actually, back in the 50s is when I started using it as a kid. And it was very new at that time, but it's shown it stood the test of time. The greatest thing about acrylic paint is that it dries quickly, whereas the oil paintings that I did a few, you have a longer period of drying time in between when you can go back and work on them, so they're not quite as practical in a commercial sense when you have deadlines and tough deadlines. So the Phantom of the Opera was an oil. And they gave me enough time to make sure I could work it through it. And then the Paragon piece was actually... was a medium called Alkyd, which is similar to oil-based house paint. So like almost like oil paint, but not quite. It dries a little faster. So most of them are acrylic. That's a good question. Yes?
I actually have two questions for you. One, I get asked a lot. I have a Back to the Future. So the question is, how did you do your model selection on the Back to the Future?
Back to the Future?
Yep. And then the other question I have for you is the process on the play field. Is it design first, then the mechanics, and then the design? How
great,
does that work?
Great question. We used to get what we called a whiteboard, and that's when the designer had gone through all the drawings, had done a routed play field, built up all the parts, played it and percentaged it, and then as Norm Clark would say at the back in the Bally days, now it's a game. and then they would release it to us, and we'd be watching that process very often. And even at Stern, I got to see the games being built before I actually was going to get to do the art. But you would kind of start to think through it a little bit, and then they would work with you on what do you want how do you want the lights arranged for the bonus features and that kind of thing. But now, what was the first part of your question? The what? Oh yes, Back to the Future. We did a game called Back to the Future for Dadius. We went out. This is where Joe Cameco first got it connected with all the Hollywood licensors, and really loved that process. But this was the first one, and Bob Gale. He became personal friends with Bob Gale. Long story short is we did the artwork, and we were told to go ahead and use the characters. Michael J. Fox at the time either was holding out for more money, or just did not want to approve that he. I guess his concern was, you know, as a kind of diminutive actor, he was worried about being Marty McFly the rest of his career if you kind of license that. And that, at least that's what they told us. So, I mean, they weren't going to stop the game. It's still, Christopher Lloyd is still the doctor on the game. But my son, one of my models, stood in for Michael J. Fox and did the modeling for that. And I just put his face on the game, and everybody was happy. One other game that happened with, too, was Hook. I did a game called Hook, and it had Robin Williams and Dustin Hoffman. Yeah, thank you. They were the characters on the game, and again, they were getting pretty savvy about this time, or their people were savvy about what a license agreement would look like and how much they should get, and they were negotiating that. And Gary Stern, I think, just said, "No, we're not doing it. We're not going to, you know, play this game." So Gary Stern is the Captain Hook character. That's Dustin Hoffman. And Joe Cameco is the Peter Pan character that's flying above. But, I mean, from the view you see it at, you can't really tell that much. But I mean, we weren't allowed to use them, so we worked around it. So, okay, any other questions? Okay, well, it's great to see everybody, and this show is fantastic. I hope you enjoy the rest of the time here. Those games on the floor look tremendous. Really takes me back because they're in such great condition. So thank you very much.